Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Kav Zayin b'Chodesh Malcheshvan, Parashas Toldos, Tav Shin Pei 5780, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 24 November, 2019. Webcasting from Israel, embarrassing Israel. Ugly Israel, where the hatred of Binyamin ben Ben-Sion is so like the hatred of Donald Trump. Irrational and envious. Let's see, Benny Gantz won 44 seats in the last election, without offering one new idea to improve Israel in any way, domestically, in foreign affairs. So why did people vote for him? What, he'll be better at making Israel's case to the world? His English is better than Bibi's? I don't think so. Bibi, after the army, went into business. He wanted to be a successful businessman. Then his brother was martyred, and Bibi went to war against PLO terrorism. When he was finance minister, he junked much of the socialist junk crippling the economy, and today, under Bibi, most people live well. Gantz spent, by contrast, his adult life in the army. Like Uncle Shimon and Dr. Balin, no experience of the private sector. People voted for one thing only in Gantz. He stood for a secular Israel, and there's got to be some connection between Mandelblit's Mittelbau decision last Thursday. A man torn, I believe, between being an Israeli Jew and regarding the law as a Gentile might, and the success of Gantz in getting as many seats as he did. He's another Israeli Mandelblit with no experience of the real world. He spent also 26 years in the army as a lawyer. He entered the army at age 22 after 3 years of law school, no university in a Western sense, and retired in the year 2011 at age 48. He then joined a think tank for a couple of years, then Netanyahu appointed him cabinet secretary. Netanyahu also supported him when he was appointed Attorney General of Israel in 2016. Apparently, Avichai Mandelblit thinks there was something criminal. I think Mandelblit is a mediocrity, and there's something wrong in the electoral system in Israel that allows for such a situation, allows for this one man to determine the course of the country. Now, I'm not up on Israeli law, but one source says he was under no obligation to do what he did last Thursday. He could have waited for some time. Right in the middle of this governmental crisis, he does something so injurious to one of the contending parties when he did not have to. Why? I can only guess that maybe while he was a protege of Bibi, who's not noted, I think, for friendliness with many people, maybe Bibi abused him, and this is his revenge, which is sheer armchair speculation on my part, or he's just a dolt and oblivious to the major political ramifications that will injure one of the politicians and benefit his rival. He also squirmed when in his announcement he expressed the four indictments with a, quote, heavy heart, which tells me he is another Israeli jurist who does not know what proper jurisprudential temperament is. Very much like the current Chief Justice of the Israeli High Court, Esther Chayut, who, when she took office, solemnly vowed to continue to fight for the needy and the aged. Bromides like these, and that is a wrong approach. A judge's job is impartiality, not social activism for any group. One of the wisest facets of Torah is the command to judges not to be swayed by anyone's status, which cuts both ways. Every 10-year-old would agree, yeah, it's wrong for a judge to favor the rich guy in a dispute, to curry up to him, but no less a judge may not favor the poor guy out of compassion for him. It is possible for a poor man to wrong a rich man. We are all moral actors. And here was Avichai Mandelblit, when announcing his indictments, doing so with a heavy heart. Why? Judges must not be slaves to their emotions. Emotion should not be an ingredient in their thinking. For this was more than an indictment then. This was his expression of belief that Netanyahu is guilty. In Mandelblit's expression, Bibi is not innocent until proven guilty. Carrying out his duty to calmly and dispassionately weigh the evidence and come to a reasonable conclusion that it's worth a trial of the hypothesis that Bibi is guilty, and fulfilling one's obligation in that position should be no cause for doing so with a heavy heart. Telling us his heart is heavy is telling us he thinks Bibi is guilty of all these crimes. And not only him, Noni Moses and the Ilovitz, they're all guilty, and this comes after the revelation of a couple weeks ago of what the police did to Bibi advisor and right-hand man Nir Chepetz to make him badmouth the prime minister. Police behavior worthy of a banana republic or Stalin's darkness at noon. They kept him in a filthy room, crawling with insects. They threatened him and his family with destruction. Disgusting behavior, and coincidentally reminiscent of what Obama's cronies did to Paul Manafort and Lieutenant General Michael Flynn and Kevin Kavanaugh. In both societies, there is major corruption in, of all places, the legal system, the police and the law courts. When in the U.S. the FBI and the Department of Justice and the CIA are run by utterly corrupt people, cronies of Emperor Clintonius the Perverse and his consort Hilarious, a.k.a. Lady Macbeth Clinton, the society as a whole is corrupt. Is it not corrupt and degenerate for once wonderful West Coast cities to be turned into third world slums, a country in which scores of thousands are dying, enslaved to narcotics? These are all connected. In Israel, Bibi last week, following the indictments, listed one infamous case here after another in which the police and the legal system went after people, made their lives miserable, and in the end, the police were proven to be wrong and their victims innocent. And so today, the prime minister was right to conduct the routine weekly cabinet meeting with no reference to last Thursday. He dealt with issues of concern to the country, and one supposes he will not give up his position without a fight, as he should not. The hostility to him is irrational, like the hostility to Trump. At the helm of the ship of state, Bibi has steered a course that has maintained the violence here that is chronic on a low flame. The economy is solid. Millions of Israelis now take vacations abroad. Deposing him makes no rational sense because there is no reason whatsoever to think Gantz would be a better prime minister. Also at work here is something absent in this stage, which is the religious factor. It's also no coincidence that within 24 hours of Mandelblit's indictments, in Tel Aviv, free public transport, 19-seat minibuses began rolling on the Sabbath. In Tel Aviv, Ramat HaSharon, Givatayim, Kiryat Ono. Of course, in the name of charity, kindness to the indigent without cars who want to go to the movies on a Friday night or the beach the next day, which is baloney. One picture of one passenger revealed a smiling, well-dressed young man who said that ordinarily he would take a taxi, admitting that the price of the taxi was hardly prohibitive, and that the service is free is attributable to the anti-religious mayor of Tel Aviv, who was on a crusade against religion in Israeli life. That the municipality is paying for this, that the service is free, exposes it as a political aggression. Tel Aviv Mayor Ron Huldai, former combat pilot and brigadier general, snickered that as there is no such thing as a Jewish chair, there's no such thing as a Jewish city or state. He is a major anti-Jew Jew, another product of the Mapai-created IDF. And one can only wonder how he would respond to the idea of removing the Star of David from the flag, because David was a religious Jew par excellence, and the presence of religion on the flag might offend him too. It is a sad day when all these towns officially violate the Sabbath, which is the ultimate in Jewish markers of identity, even more than the circumcision. Non-Jews, if they're smart, circumcise their sons. Arabs circumcise themselves, though they remain barbarians. Now, the quintessential Jewish act is Shabbos. And how do we know this? Look at the Ten Commandments. The first three are, for want of a better word, philosophical tenets, acts of the mind. Not until commandment number four are we commanded to actually do something. The first one that commands material effort and behavior. And that's keeping Shabbos. Shabbos demands a lot of behavior, most of it before Shabbos in preparation. Shabbos comes before honor your father and mother. It's that important. It comes before no adultery, no murder, no theft. Shabbos is so important, even the post-religious Zionist founders of Tel Aviv and all these towns just knew Shabbos was the distinctive Jewish behavior. And while they had jettisoned the religion for themselves individually, they knew the collective Jewish identity in the public square is Shabbos. Last week, the opponents of this latest rebellion against being a people that dwells alone cited famous Zionist poet Chaim Nachman Bialik and the first mayor of Tel Aviv, Meir Dizengoff, who also supported Shabbos in the public square despite all their other deviations from classic Jewishness. There is a connection somehow between this violation of the Sabbath in this first Hebrew city, the secular Zionists boasted, meaning in which the language spoken is Hebrew, and the nasty aggression against Prime Minister Netanyahu, an aggression he does not deserve.
כמו הולך על חבל דק משאיר מאחוריך רק אבק מביט לאחור ולא יודע איך לחזור להדביק שוב את השבר שנסדק בוחן כל צעד כישלון מול הצלחה היקע כל גדול קורא לך אז בואו נעוף גבוה יותר אומרים שבסוף הכל מסתדר לא הכל טוב אבל הכל לטובה אז בואו נעוף גבוה יותר אומרים שבסוף הכל מסתדר לא הכל טוב אבל הכל לטובה לוקח נשימה אתה נמלט מעצמך אם טוב או לא אתה מכתיב את גורלך רואה איך קשרים שהסתבכו לפני שנים נפרמים ומתיישרים נעלמים אתה יודע ממקום ראות אחר אפשר לראות ברור נעוף גבוה יותר אומרים שבסוף הכל מסתדר לא הכל טוב אבל הכל לטובה אז בואו נעוף גבוה יותר אומרים שבסוף הכל מסתדר לא הכל טוב אבל הכל לטובה שבסוף הכל מסתדר לא הכל טוב אבל הכל לטובה אז בואו נעוף גבוה יותר אומרים שבסוף הכל מסתדר לא הכל טוב אבל הכל לטובה
So, as the Prime Minister acted today as if nothing had happened last week, he ran the usual Sunday cabinet meeting, I also will happily ignore the political scene here, which is making me sick, all this jockeying for power, attempts to topple Bibi inside Likud, and turn to some good news out of the United Kingdom, and some bad. The good news was a public letter signed by some intellectuals, artists, writers, against the anti-Semitism of Labour in the upcoming election of Jeremy Corbyn. Among them was spy novelist John le Carré and his colleague Frederick Forsyth and actress Joanne Lumley. Also, in a separate item out of the UK, Joan Ryan, who quit the Labour Party last February over Corbyn's anti-Semitism, addressed last Thursday an ADL gathering, saying that in the 4 years since Corbyn took over Labour, quote, Jewish MPs have been bullied out of the party. Jewish members have been abused, harassed, and threatened, and I could not remain in such a party. And she said she will not campaign for Corbyn as the next prime minister. She said, quote, too many people in Labour believed it, the anti-Semitism, was just a few bad apples for far too long. By the time Labour became institutionally anti-Semitic, it was far too late to root out the Jew haters. We should have been saying from the outset that Corbyn's hatred of Israel was repugnant and that his tolerance of anti-Semitism, his past association with Holocaust deniers, Jew haters, and terrorist sympathizers made him unfit to be Britain's prime minister, close quote. Yeah, and it seems that as the Democratic Party in the States, like leastwise judging by the mediocrities running for president, has gone socialist when 20th century liberalism was identified with liberal anti-communism, so British Labour has morphed into the anti-Semitic party, which, by the way, was the serious name of a party in Vienna at the turn of the 20th century, in power at the time of the first Zionist Congress. This was before anti-Semitism, the very word, was connected to mass murder. Anti-Semitism, to a large degree in Herzl's Vienna, was a variety of anti-immigrant feeling, because many refugees, Jews from Russia and Eastern Europe, had become a significant community, and the locals were understandably unhappy with this invasion of foreigners. Historians claim Hitler's first idea was not extermination, but expulsion of the Jews. Only after the world countries shut the doors to the Jews did he embark on the final solution. Today, though, as British Labour morphs into the party of anti-Semitism, it's another strain different from the one of Vienna a century ago. It's even crazier, for that earlier incarnation before Hitler had some realistic human reactions to Jews versus today's Jew hatred a la Corbyn and fellow British Jew haters like David Irving and Ken Livingstone and George Galloway. They're simply off their rockers, these men, in their irrational perception of Jews as major evildoers in our alleged racist abuse of the ancient ones. For example, British Labour just released on Thursday its platform regarding foreign and defense policies in the event Labour wins the upcoming election, God forbid. The party will recognize immediately a state of Palestine and halt all arms sales to Israel, and likewise suspend them to Saudi Arabia, which is fighting in Yemen. Israel will be embargoed militarily because of, quote, its violation of the human rights of Palestinian civilians, and conduct a root and branch reform of our arms exports regime so ministers can never again turn a blind eye to British-made weapons being used to target innocent civilians, close quote. You got that? This is the functional equivalent of the age-old blood libel that conjures up Jews who murder innocent people for their religious beliefs. When this official document of the British Labour Party insinuates that Israeli soldiers use British-made weapons to basically murder people who are in fact innocent civilians. This is like Tulsi Gabbard claiming that the IDF shoots and kills unarmed demonstrators. In truth, they are homicidal armed rioters. This woman needs a visit to a spiritual ophthalmologist to correct her vision. Likewise, Labour in this policy statement is right out of the dark ages, when English people, Christians, believed the worst about Jews, believed in fantasies of Jewish evil with no basis in fact. Homicidal anti-Semitism must surely be registered in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual used by psychiatrists and clinical psychologists as a diagnostic tool. Men like Corbyn are truly twisted in their minds about Jews. They're delusional about Jews. Like the college students who once a year hold Israel apartheid weeks when there's no apartheid in Israel. This is a mental disorder. On the bright side of news out of England, last Thursday as well, it was reported that a 121-page report has just been produced by the C of E, the Church of England, in which the church spoke the truth that leading up to and feeding the Holocaust had been the persecution of Jews justified by Christian theology. The title of the report is God's Unfailing Word, Theological and Practical Perspectives on Christian-Jewish Relations, which said attitudes towards Jews over centuries had proved to be, quote, a fertile seedbed for murderous anti-Semitism, and that Anglicans and other Christians must repent the sins of the past and resist anti-Semitic attitudes and stereotypes, close quote. It also rejected the historic collective guilt attributed to the Jews for the death of Christ, and their suffering justified collective punishment. It also, oh so politely, very British, admitted that some of the language used by pro-Palestinians is, quote, reminiscent of what could be called traditional anti-Semitism. I hope I live to see the day when the term anti-Semitism goes out of fashion, because it was dishonest camouflage for hating Jews in a new key when Christianity went out of intellectual fashion. Still, the core sentiment and honest self-reflection here is most welcome, and surely the place of Jew hatred in British politics these days is central. The statement by the C of E did not come from nowhere, and so that's good. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. And now for some good news out of Israel. The Jewish Press's David Israel is reporting that for two Fridays now in a row, there have been no riots along the barrier with Gaza. And he says the new defense minister, Naftali Bennett, deserves the credit. Reading between the lines, it seems that without fanfare, Bennett has made clear to Muslims in Gaza the IDF will respond more forcefully than in the past. Perhaps. Also in play is the internal friction between Hamas and Islamic Jihad, the eternal fraternal infighting so characteristic of the Ishmaelites. Of course, Fatah and Hamas have never since 1993 been able to unite, because fratricide is in their spiritual DNA. One of the blind spots, major blind spots, of the Oslo peace delusionists was treating the Arabs, the so-called Palestinians, as if they were just like us when they're not. A major point in my book is the role played in the Oslo fiasco by Israelis and other Jewish leftists in inventing the Palestinians a nation just like the Jewish nation, with an attachment to their ancient homeland, just like the Jews, who want a state in their ancient homeland, just like the Jews, and above all, just like us in the Judeo-Christian West, they are amenable to negotiations that in the end will mean compromise, with neither side getting all it wants. The Palestinians are just like us Zionists, thought Rabin, Balin, Peres, and fellow Israeli fools. What Israelis of the left and center-left have never learned, because it's too depressing a thought, is that the only way to deal with the Arabs is the way Arabs deal with Arabs. Everywhere they have been independent, especially since the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, they have produced, under their own steam, nowhere, forced by the imperialists, to come up with governments that are commonly dictatorships. They rule with an iron fist everywhere. One American mistake displayed these last 18 years since 9/11 has been the futile task, as in Vietnam it was a futile crusade, to export American culture, rooted in English culture, to these very different societies. Democracy is not necessarily the right system for all peoples. Look at what Obama and Hillary did in Egypt. They brought down the military dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak. They called for new elections, and sure enough, the Muslim Brotherhood won. As Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood won in Yesha in 2006, with the Brotherhood still in power in Gaza. As the Brotherhood went to war against the FLN in Algeria in 1992, when the regime there canceled the very elections it had called for the first time in 30 years because the Muslims won. Thomas Jefferson was the most radical liberal in the American Revolution, and even he admitted that democracy cannot exist among a population of uneducated illiterates, which is who these Arab Muslims are. They have been incapable since 1993, supported by zillions of dollars in goodwill to rule themselves democratically. And where else in Araby have they been able to do that? The closest they have come has been in Tunisia, but that fact strengthens the view that they are commonly incapable of that. 21 Arab states that are also officially Muslim states are not at all politically like those in the West, and that is why the Oslo delirium had to fail, and why Mordechai Kedar's idea of separate emirate-like communities among the tribes in Judea and Samaria should be the rational way to manage them after we annex all of Judea and Samaria, because it is our right to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for the first night of the week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.